Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I am Gary Gramling. I will be joined by Jenny Brentis in just a moment here. Wild Week 14. We have the shootout between the 49ers and the Saints. We have the Patriots' continued struggles. We had some terrible officiating. We had some coaches getting onto very hot seats. But Jenny, we are starting with a Sunday night game, and it was a little bit of turn back the clock for the Rams, a little bit of turn back the clock all the way to like October 2018.
Yeah, Rams defense was dominant. Todd Gurley had a good game. It felt like this was a team that was a contender, and you know, most of the season we've been trying to kind of make sense of the Rams and seemed like they'd fallen off pretty far since their Super Bowl appearance, but this looked a lot more like the team that we saw last year, and it reminded us that they're still in play for a playoff spot. They needed this win to really stay in the mix, and they delivered.
The NFC is obviously just so deep. They're sitting at 8-5 right now. They might get to like 10-6 and be going home early.
Yeah, the NFC has no wiggle room right now. As opposed to the AFC, where it seems like that sixth spot, you know, has been totally, you know, who knows exactly what the record of that team getting in there will be. But the NFC, you know, you have this wild swing from first in the NFC West to the first wild card that the Seahawks and the 49ers have kind of been going back and forth on, and it's a slim margin between having a home field advantage and being on the road for the playoffs.
Yeah, talking about this game particularly, this is a 28-12 Rams victory over the Seahawks. It was convincing victory, and it seems like when things are going well for the Rams offense, it's when they protect Jared Goff. I mean, the offensive line, lots of new faces this year. They sort of have that new look line that Chris Collinsworth loves so much. It's Andrew Whitworth, and then it's Blythe at center, and they have Bobby Evans and David Andrews now, and they're getting the job done. But I don't necessarily know if this was a matter of the Rams offensive line getting right or sort of being what it used to be, or is it just the Seahawks pass rush is just kind of non-existent? I mean, I know Clowney's a big name. I know Jerron Reed is a good player, but those guys aren't great pass rushers. And then the edge guys are just kind of, you know, they're kind of eh.
That's how I felt, Gary, too. It felt like it's a pretty good matchup for the Rams so that Jared Goff wasn't under a lot of pressure. It wasn't some kind of relentless team where they're coming after him all night. Definitely didn't have that feel. And yeah, the offensive line has been a story for the Rams all season. Been in flux, been at the heart of some of their struggles. But I agree with you. I think they for the Rams, this was a pretty good matchup. And I think they performed well. And I think also the Rams defense was fantastic and really held Seahawks offense that had been hard to stop. Russell Wilson had been in the MVP race, scored 6 points on offense at least. So it was, yep. It was a terrific performance for Wade Phillips and crew.
Yeah, just two field goals here for the Seahawks offense. The other 6 points came on the pick six for Quandre Diggs, who the Detroit Lions just want no part of. They're glad they don't have him there anymore, making plays for them. But that was the only touchdown tonight for the Seahawks. Just a lack of big plays, and I guess it sort of ties into a couple of things here. There's one, the fact that when you're a run-first team, which the Seahawks are, you kind of have to get away from that when you're trailing, and they were trailing early. They were down 14-3 in the second quarter, 21-3 by halftime. So you take that element away. And on top of that, they didn't have the big play tonight. The one big play, if you want to call it that, was pretty much garbage time. They had a 3rd and 22, and Jalen Ramsey bit on a double move on a 3rd and 22. I assume if the game was in doubt, he would not have. But then DK Metcalf got behind him for a 35-yard play. But other than that, that was pretty much it. I mean, the Seahawks offense really. They lost Rashad Penny. They didn't really get a chance to get the ground game going, and they didn't do anything else in this game.
It seemed like coming out of halftime, defense was making big plays. Perhaps the tide was shifting in the Seahawks' favor. But then ultimately, as you said, it came back to the fact that the offense couldn't really make those big plays, couldn't sustain to get their way back into the game. And so that early surge of energy right after halftime evaporated pretty quickly for Seattle.
I was going to say, this is another one. We'll talk about the Patriots in a little bit, but it was another one where, like, a team looked pretty good on the opening drive. Like, Seahawks looked pretty good on that opening drive. 11 plays, 54 yards. They end up settling for a short field goal, and that was kind of it for them all night. They didn't really move the ball other than an impressive first drive. Some of the bigger picture things coming out of this game, obviously, playoff seeding very much at play for the Seahawks. They now fall a game behind the 49ers in the NFC West. As you know, that's potentially the difference between a one seed in the and home field advantage and having to go on the road in the wild card round, probably to the quote unquote winner of the NFC East. But it seems like, looking at the Seahawks' schedule, they go to Carolina and they host Arizona, and then Week 17, they host the 49ers, and it seems like that is the game that will decide who's going to win the West here.
Yeah, the Seahawks have a pretty favorable schedule ahead, as you mentioned, the Panthers and the Cardinals up next. So it's very feasible to see them going into that final game of the season, and they won, importantly, that November 11th matchup. The Seahawks beat the 49ers in San Francisco, or in Santa Clara, rather. So that sets up this dramatic Week 17 game, because the Seahawks, if they win out, they would win the division.
Seahawks are weird. They're just a weird team. I still can't believe it's a 10-win team at this point. But good on them. Wins are wins.
You have a great stat here in your show notes, Gary, that if not for Greg Zuerlein missing a 44-yarder in Seattle on a Thursday night in Week 5, the Rams would be sitting ahead of the Seahawks.
They would. They'd both be sitting at 9-4 right now, and we'd be talking about the Rams and are they gearing up for another Super Bowl run here? Instead, the Rams, look, Rams are at 8-5. It's been a really good year. Are they going to catch the Vikings? I mean, they're a game back of Minnesota, as they mentioned on the broadcast, on the NBC broadcast. If the Rams win out and they can catch Minnesota, there's a good chance they would win the tiebreaker. But they basically do have to win out at this point, and they do not have the they don't have a schedule like the Seahawks have yet. They have to go to Dallas, they have to go to San Francisco, and then they wrap up at home against the Cardinals.
Yeah, it's just a reminder of how small these margins are. Right now, today, 49ers have a huge win and the Seahawks have a disappointing loss. And it seems like the 49ers have the momentum in the division, in the NFC, but there's still 3 weeks left. And it could all come down to Week 17 in terms of who has the number one seed. So it's hard to really know, make any sweeping conclusions, Gary.
I know. NFC every year. I mean, we haven't had a back-to-back NFC representative in the Super Bowl since the Seahawks in 48 and 49. And I think you have to go much further back. I feel like it's been like 10 years where it's only the Seahawks as the back-to-back representative. Oh, we have a lot more to cover from Week 14 here. We are going to talk about the 49ers and that offensive explosion in New Orleans to steal that game. We're going to talk about the Patriots and their continued struggles offensively. The Texans just decide they're going to take a week off. Ravens clinch a playoff spot. Browns win a game, but nobody cares about that because they just can't avoid the rest of the drama here. We're going to talk a little bit about Jason Garrett as well. So plenty of show to go. Please stay with us. All right, we're back. Let's go back to very early on Sunday afternoon. The game of the day, maybe the game of the year so far in the 2019 season, that would be the 49ers going down to New Orleans and winning in the Superdome 48-46. And I mean, look, this score was shockingly high. This is just a ridiculous amount of points against these two defenses.
Did not expect the point total to be what it was. Did not expect the outcome to be what it was. If you had said to me that this game was going to be a shootout, and that the 49ers would win, that wouldn't have been anywhere on my realm of possibilities. You know, both teams have had good defenses, and I wouldn't have guessed that Jimmy Garoppolo would be able to go toe-to-toe in such a high-scoring game. But I think the way that it worked out, it really was such a confidence boost for the 49ers. You know, they came off of last week's game, which was a tough loss, but they were there to the very end. And I thought that loss showed as much about them as a win would have. And they followed it up by, you know, another game on the road and against a quality opponent. And, you know, I think they're really, you know, answering a lot of the questions we had about the 49ers earlier in the season, particularly if Jimmy Garoppolo would be able to match the offensive firepower of some of these other teams.
I know. I mean, the Saints scored touchdowns on their first four drives in this game, and they were absolutely just overwhelming the 49ers defense. And if that was a scenario, you just would not think the 49ers would be able to hang in this one, let alone open up a double-digit, or I should say a two-possession lead at one point in the fourth quarter here. But yeah, I mean, that was Kyle Shanahan and this misdirection stuff where they get the defense flowing one way and then take advantage of them the other way. We kind of think of some of the more mobile quarterbacks in that, in that sort of system. Garoppolo is an athlete. He's not, you know, he's not a huge running threat, though. But what they're doing, the misdirection stuff, is just, everything Kyle Shanahan called was just absolute gold in this game.
Yeah, it did seem like this game was kind of a showcase for his creativity as an offensive play caller, which we have known since he's been in San Francisco. But, you know, last year they lost Garoppolo early in the season, and, you know, the team has struggled for the previous 2 years. So, you know, he didn't really have a chance to see it on this kind of stage, and it's a reminder of exactly why people around the league say he's one of the best play callers, one of the most creative offensive minds. That certainly was on show today. And I think, you know, you see Garoppolo kind of settling into this rhythm a little bit more, and the offense has just gotten better and better as the season's gone on, I think. You know, early on, they're so defined by their defense. But this was the one statement game that he had that, hey, he could match, you know, another offensive firepower. He could throw four touchdowns. So it answered really a lot of questions.
I was going to say, they had two really neat little trick plays in this one. One was Emmanuel Sanders' 35-yard pass on a trick play to Raheem Mostert, who Raheem Mostert is all of a sudden like Thurman Thomas. He has been completely untackleable the last couple of weeks. 10 carries for 69 yards in this game, and then that long touchdown catch as well. They stole one from Sean Payton, a little play that Payton runs with Zach Line sometimes, that sort of fullback option type of thing. They did that with Kyle Juszczyk and got a nice little chunk play out of that. So everything was open here for the 49ers. They end up with 516 yards of offense and 48 points in the Superdome. And, of course, the big play in this one. Last week we saw them not convert the fourth down late and lose in Baltimore. This time they get the fourth and two late, a 39-yard catch and run to George Kittle, who just sort of took Marcus Williams for a ride. Poor Marcus Williams just ends up on the wrong end of too many highlights.
Yeah, that Kittle play was really a fun one to watch because, you know, he's this yards after catch guy, but he just kind of kept rolling down the field. And then obviously they tack on the penalty at the end, and then he beats his chest and they kick the field goal to win.
Well, let's go up to Foxborough. Chiefs 23, Patriots 16. And this one opened up. Patriots went on a really impressive drive to start this game. Obviously, the big storyline here is can the Patriots score points? Can they move the ball? They had a 5-play, 83-yard drive. It looked like everything might be okay in this one for the offense, and then they just sort of went silent. And, you know, the Chiefs kind of Chiefs led this one 20-7 late in the first half, and they just sort of like they held on is what this ended up being. And it was just another week of just sort of that punchless Patriots offense.
Yeah, on one hand, you could say that the Chiefs defense looks like it's getting better through the course of the year, and that is a positive thing for them. But then again, this is a Patriots offense that's really been stalling out, so it's hard to draw too many conclusions about the Chiefs necessarily. You know, on the broadcast, I think Tony Romo made a really good point in that the Patriots bring out trick plays when they need them. And we saw them bringing out a lot of trick plays in this game. You know, the flea flicker, obviously, and, you know, they used James White in a couple different trick plays, right? So they obviously felt like they needed those trick plays to get the offense moving. And I don't know that that bodes very well. My biggest question with the Patriots offense is just what is going to be the solution to fix it, right? Because in previous years, maybe it would hit a lull when Rob Gronkowski had an injury, but you'd say, okay, well, Gronkowski will return and they'll get a boost. You know, maybe, you know, early in the season, we've seen them struggle when Brady's trying to figure out with new weapons. But what's different now is that these three losses have come since the start of November. So we're seeing them hit this struggle period later than we normally see them hit it. And there's no clear solution. You know, maybe N'Keal Harry continues to grow in the offense. Maybe Jacoby Myers continues to grow in the position. You know, maybe Mohamed Sanu, you know, acquired by midseason trade, he continues to figure out ways to contribute. But there's no clear answer to fix their ails. And that's why I do think this year's struggles are a little different than the lulls we've seen in the past, because it's so easy to laugh them off now because we've seen them come out of it and go to the Super Bowl. But I think in each of those cases, it was a very different circumstance.
Yeah, I was going to say that there's no one coming back at this point. There's no, like, you know, this isn't like Gronk is out for a month and he's coming back. I mean, they just don't have the weapons right now to do it. And yeah, that's I mean, when they break out those gadget plays, that's always when they know they're in trouble. It you know, I always think back to when they lost to the Chip Kelly Eagles a couple years ago, and they could not do anything against a pretty meh Eagles defense. And like the one play they got all game was like a throwback Tom Brady like 40-yard reception, and like that was it. And that's kind of what they end up doing in these situations here. The other thing is they can't get this run game going. James Devlin, I think it was a much bigger loss than a lot of people realized. They have not gotten anything going. 22 carries for 94 yards for them in this one. Brandon Bolden scored on a little like fly sweep type of play to get him a touchdown after they basically went scoreless for you know, a good 35 minutes in this game. But I don't know. It just seems like it's not going to get right. And if they're going to win in January, it's just going to be overwhelmingly dominant defense.
Yeah, and your point about Devlin's a great one. In every aspect of their offense, they've taken a hit. They've taken a hit in weapons to throw to, in blockers, and in the run game. So it's not like they can lean on one more heavily than the other. That seems to be, you know, another pickle that they're in, right, is that all parts of the offense are having some kind of issue.
Yeah, and not that we need to get on officiating more this season, but we did have a call. The Patriots were out of challenges, and N'Keal Harry scored a touchdown. I mean, he scored a touchdown. They showed it on the replay immediately afterwards. It's the kind of thing that if you had Sky Judge in the NFL, it would have been corrected in about 6 seconds, and we would have all moved on with our lives with a correctly officiated game. Patriots did not have challenges. They had to end up settling for a field goal instead of getting a touchdown, and then obviously late in this game, they were down the full touchdown 23-16 on the last drive, brought it down deep into Chiefs territory. They ended up with a what were they looking at? They're looking at like a fourth and four, I want to say. I'm trying to pull up the play-by-play and just clicking terribly on the internet right now. Just
missing. It was less than 5 yards, so I guess you could say it was a fourth and short.
Fourth and three from the five is what it was. Bashaud Breeland made a really nice play to break that up. But obviously, and look, it's butterfly effect. If they had scored a touchdown instead of settled for a field goal in the last one, do the Chiefs play it the same way on their two ensuing drives? So it's not necessarily a matter of just, you know, they definitely would have just needed a field goal at that point to tie the game. But that might have been the situation if the game was called properly, which you can do without the challenge system. that everybody hates.
And this one was particularly egregious because there were two separate plays in which points were taken off the board, or they should have had points. Mm-hmm. And so that's why those feel more egregious than other ones that may affect the outcome of a play. When it affects the outcome of a score, then it's so much bigger in the context of the game. Ultimately, I feel as though the conversations this offseason will be toward the sky judge, because that's what the coaches wanted in last spring. And I think we've seen enough issues this year. And really the biggest issue is that the officiating crews are less experienced. So they're just getting more things wrong on the field. And really the only way to fix that, to get, you know, the only way to address these myriad issues would be to have the sky judge.
Well, we have more officiating talk coming up in the show a little bit later. One more thing, actually, I want to mention in this game before we move on. And as we discussed, it is a much different and much lesser version of the Patriots offense. But it was nice to see Steve Spagnuolo really dial up the blitzes and really heat up Tom Brady in this one, which a lot of people thought the Chiefs should have done last January in the AFC title game, when Brady was just sort of going up and down the field on them rather than them playing coverage. So wouldn't necessarily have worked out the same way in January, but good to see some aggressiveness.
I agree, Gary.
Let's go down to Houston. Probably the most shocking result of the day. That was Broncos go in there and just smash the Texans. 38-24 is the final. The game was not as close as that final score. Well, that's not a very close final score anyway, but this was 38-3 midway through the third quarter, and it was just all garbage time after that. And the Texans ended up picking up three late touchdowns to, I don't know, be less embarrassed. But gosh, coming off that Patriots win, what a Texans-y letdown here.
It's exactly right, Gary. They're such an inconsistent team. And last week was such a huge moment for the franchise, for Bill O'Brien. They finally beat the Patriots. And maybe it was inevitable that they would have this kind of letdown because, you know, they've been a frustrating team, right? They have so much talent, so much promise, and they always seem to come up short in the big moments. And last week, they finally delivered in a big moment, and then they look like it's a totally different team this week. Now, you know, maybe Drew Lock really is this revelation. You know, we're just now seeing him. This is a new introduction to what the rookie quarterback could be like. But beyond that, it was just, you know, it just makes you think, one, you know, that they're not getting the most necessarily out of the things that they have in Houston. And two, that this is why expectations are never quite as high as maybe they should be, right? You know, it's hard to ever see them as a true championship contender because of losses like this one.
It's that defense. And look, there are weeks where the defense is terrible and Deshaun Watson just sort of does a Superman thing. And you know, in the end, we don't really notice. But especially with Watt out, and they just don't have quite the pass rush they had. And they are just a mess on the back end. A lot of bust-ish former first-round picks that they scooped up from other teams that let these guys go, that they're, you know, whether it be Gary and Conley or Vernon Hargreaves that they're running out back there. But it just seems like there are always communication issues and always coverage busts with this Texans secondary. And the fact that they just don't have the same pass rush, they're just sort of leaving themselves open to performances like this. We should be a little bit positive, though. Drew Lock looked incredibly sharp in this game. This wasn't just merely a matter of a young quarterback taking advantage of a defense that was kind of a mess. Lock made a couple of eye-popping throws in this game, and I mean, you know, last week was kind of got off to a fast start and then faded pretty badly against the Chargers in his first start. This was, I mean, if he strings together a run of games like this to finish the season, I think the Broncos, you know, they might not be saying we have our next John Elway or something, but they're probably not in the market for another quarterback this offseason.
Yeah, it was definitely a mixed bag last week against the Chargers, so I was interested to see how he followed it up. And this was not the performance that I expected. This was much stronger than I thought. And there looking at Twitter, the reaction is most hope at the quarterback position since Peyton Manning, which it's amusing the overstatements that happened with rookie quarterbacks. Of course, a few weeks ago, Connor and I were lauding me for not hating the Daniel Jones pick, and we all see how that has that has tailed off a little bit. So, you know, don't want to react too much to one performance, but yes, it does. If he finishes this season, there is a different sense of, hey, maybe we have that position workable at least, or maybe figured out, and maybe we can start building from there. Because that's really what the Broncos have kind of been stuck in the last couple of years, is they haven't had that figured out. And, you know, good defensive pieces around them complementing that have been aging. And it's just hard to see them really being a factor or really knowing exactly what stage of, a rebuild, or could they patch it up and be okay? But if they have Locke, I think it's a little bit clearer where the team is at and going into the second year with Vic Fangio.
Yeah, the defense has still been good, even without Bradley Chubb here. Von Miller was back this week. But yeah, they've defense has played all year. The offense has been up and down. I really like Rich Scangarello. Whenever I do a show with Connor, we always talk about our shared love of Rich Scangarello. I think we like him a lot more than Vic Fangio seems to like him, based on Vic Fangio kind of taking little jabs at him last week after they drew that late pass interference call, and Fangio saying, well, the offensive coach wanted to take a kneel down there and go to overtime and that sort of thing. But Scangarello did a really nice job with Brandon Allen. He, did a real good job early with his script for Drew Locke. And then this week, Locke really took off. I mean, they completely blew out this Texans team.
And Scangarello was the guy who first got Jimmy Garoppolo ready after his midseason trade from the Patriots.
There you go. If you wanna start plucking off that Kyle Shanahan tree like everyone did with the Sean McVay tree, I'm not saying Scangarello is gonna get a job this offseason, but maybe a couple teams bring him in, kick the tires a little bit, that are looking for head coaches. Maybe get some ideas from him here. Quick look at the AFC South. We now have the Texans and Titans tied at 8-5. They have not played yet this year. They played twice in the last 3 weeks, including next week in Nashville. So this is it. If one of these teams sweeps the two games against the opponent, they will win the division. In between there, you have the Texans play the Bucks, and the Titans have to play the Saints. So I don't know. I guess both teams sort of control their destiny at this point.
It's really weird scheduling. Yeah, really weird scheduling to see it so that they're crammed into the final 3 weeks. And obviously, yeah, the Titans have the tougher game with the Saints versus the Bucks in the middle, but it doesn't matter because you can just sweep the other two and see what happens. But this isn't how I expected the AFC South race to finish early in the year. The way the Colts started, it seemed like it would come down to them and the Texans. And but they've really had this renaissance under Ryan Tannehill, and the contrast to the Raiders today was a striking one, right? Because the Raiders kind of really have tailed off the last 3 weeks, and the Titans have just kind of continued their ascent.
Let's jump into that game now. We'll stay with the AFC playoff race here. We'll go Titans. Titans went to Oakland, 142-21. This game was actually tied at 21 at halftime, and then Titans just ran away with it in the second half. But I guess from the Raiders' side, this is kind of what we expected the Raiders to be all season. They were like major overachievers in the first half of the year, and now it's like I don't know what's better. I don't know if it's better to overachieve early and then tail off, and then everyone like leaves with a bad taste in their mouths, or do it like the Browns did last year, where you're terrible early, and then you have the big second half, and then everyone's super excited for next year, even if maybe it knocks expectations out of a realistic range.
I think it's always better to finish stronger, because like you said, then the offseason narratives are like, could this team be a Super Bowl contender? Whereas if you start fast and they fade out, it just feeds into the whole, same old whatever, insert team here.
Yeah.
Not going anywhere.
Well, the The Titans, I mean, the Titans also, they had a deep red zone turnover early in this one that set up the Raiders' first score. Raiders did have a 7-0 lead in this one. And then it was just all Titans here. And look, I'm not a big Ryan Tannehill guy, but I think this is definitely the right offense for him as far as their identity goes. Obviously, it's a ton of Derrick Henry. It's heavy in the run game. And then Tannehill is just taking these deep shots. He threw an absolutely perfect deep ball while absorbing contact to A.J. Brown for a 91-yard touchdown for the Titans' second touchdown of this game. He ends up throwing for 391 on only 27 attempts in this one, which is, I mean, that's really good quarterbacking. That's you know, it's almost like the Russell Wilson identity for this offense on the East Coast, even if Tannehill is obviously not the talent that that Russell Wilson is.
Yeah, that throw you referenced was a really great one. He was to get that off under pressure. I when he started to be swarmed, I didn't think he would get the throw off, and you know, then it was a huge play in the game. And it's obviously back and forth for a bit, but the Titans just always felt like, you know, I don't know, it seemed like that they were going to take control of it at some point, which is exactly what they did.
Well, let's go out to Arizona. Steelers just keep on winning. 23-17 over the Cardinals here. This is another one that was, again, Duck Hodges, as Mike Tomlin likes to say, didn't kill him. You know, just did just enough here. And then you had the defense dominating, and you had special teams in this one. You had Deontay Johnson with an 85-yard punt return. And it's like Hodges is allowing his receivers to make just enough plays. And they're, you know, they got that sort of misdirection heavy run game going with Jalen Samuels, who left this one with an injury early on after a big hit. Lots of Benny Snell in this one, and it's not a beautiful offense, but it's certainly getting the job done considering what the defense is doing and considering what the in this one with the special teams were doing.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. They're on their third quarterback, and the reason is because of that defense. And you've heard a lot of players give credit to Mike Tomlin, and I think he's had a huge impact on how well that defense is playing and keeping the team afloat. And this was one of those games that, you know, you go all the way out to Arizona, and Kyler Murray has shown some promise this year. He can be hard to stop, but you saw Joe Hayden's plays, TJ Watt. They just seem to be able to come up big in moments when, you know, the offense is kind of okay. They're not killing them, but they're not doing great, and then the defense makes a big play and turns things around. So you know, Tomlin's been in coach of the year discussions because of the fact that they're still in the playoff race, and I think he deserves to be.
I know. Can you imagine if the defense was playing like this the last couple years when they had, you know, they had the killer bees and they had all that going? It's got to be a little bit sad for Steelers fans, but feel good about this one. Team keeps on winning. Five takeaways in this one. They don't turn it over at all. And as I mentioned, that big 85-yard punt return from Deontay Johnson is what put him ahead. And they end up holding on in the second half as the Cardinals kind of sputter for a second straight week here. Let's go out to Buffalo, where the Ravens clinch their playoff spot with a 24-17 victory over the Bills, but no celebration, kind of rightfully so.
Yeah, John Harbaugh said that he kind of said in the locker room, and there was what scattered applause, and you know, I think that's kind of what where this team is. You could tell they know that they have something special, and they've all really bought into Lamar Jackson, and there's just an excitement on the sidelines, and it seems like every week there's some kind of video clip of, you know, whether it's Harbaugh talking to Jackson or some kind of exchange between teammates on the sidelines or some juke play, right? I mean, it just seems like this team really has that special quality, and I think like we saw that last year perhaps with the Chiefs. Maybe they were last year's special team, and maybe it's this year's Ravens, but I mean, they're really in great position now. And the Patriots are struggling, and, you know, the Ravens are in that top spot. So, of course, they're feeling confident that, you know, hey, winning a playoff berth is so far from what their expectations are now, and they're not afraid to say that.
Yeah, it's right now they are obviously a game and a half up on the Patriots game, but they have the tiebreaker since they won outright. So they just have to, if they beat you know, the Jets and the Steelers at home. They also go to Cleveland. If they win two of those games, is my math wrong, Jenny? If they win one of those games, no, this Patriots can still catch them. I don't know why I couldn't figure out that 3-1 was 2, but 3-1 is 2.
I'm having trouble with
that. If they win two of their last three, they will be the one seed no matter what, and I will invest in a watch with a calculator on it or something, so I don't have so much trouble going forward. But this was one. I mean, look, Lamar Jackson had a couple of highlight reel plays, but this was, as everything is when you go to Buffalo, this was a struggle offensively for the Ravens. They end up with 257 yards of offense. Lamar throws for 145. He only ran for 40 in this one. They only had 118 rushing yards in this one. I mean, the Bills did keep them pretty well contained in this one. It was kind of about the defense today, and Wink Martindale that defense gives you a lot to think about pre-snap and then also a lot of times post-snap. And Josh Allen, who had been on a nice little run here, he was just not up to the task in this one. Ends up he's 17 for 39, only 146. He takes 6 sacks. This was an ugly game, and the Ravens sort of out-uglied the Bills.
Yeah, and that came down to sort of that last play that Marcus Peter reaches in and makes the breakup of the pass to John Brown, and that midseason acquisition, right? You bring another piece like that into your defense. And so the Ravens have just been able to win a lot of different ways this year, and today that way was, hey, a guy that we got midseason was a part of a big defensive showing.
Well, let's go out to Cincinnati. The Browns won, which you'd think would be, you know, cause for celebration and everyone would be happy there. They beat the Bengals 27-19. Excuse me, this game was in Cleveland. It was not in Cincinnati. So they beat the Bengals, their intrastate rivals at home, 27-19. A bit of a close game, a bit of a dogfight here. They hang on. All is well, except all the storylines are about everything but the game here for the Cleveland Browns, which I guess is the way it is for them in 2019.
Pre-game reports that Odell Beckham is not happy, that he's been, Fox Sports reported, he's been telling opposing coaches and players that, come get me out of here. There's also a report that he's been dealing with a sports hernia. Then after the game, Baker Mayfield makes a comment that the injury was mishandled and that perhaps Beckham should have gotten surgery before the season. Then he sort of walks it back on Twitter and says he's not criticizing the training staff. So this has been what the whole year has been like in Cleveland, right, Gary? It's just been this kind of ongoing chitter-chatter of what might be lying beneath the surface that is tanking the once purported Super Bowl contenders.
I was going to say, it's almost like if you wanted an alternate universe, like what the Seattle Seahawks might have been like 5 years ago, if they were going like 7-9 every season, and the kind of stuff that you'd see coming out of that locker room. I mean, winning fixes these things, and this team is just they're not winning. I mean, they're a pretty mediocre team, and we've gone through their, you know, their issues on the offensive line and Baker's regression and not getting Odell involved and all that stuff all year. But gosh, it's like, I don't want to pile on Baker. I mean, Baker says stuff, and that's just the way he goes. And I'm fine with Baker, you know, sort of being like the guy who sort of, you know, conjures these like underdog stories for himself to quash these so-called critics and haters and whatever he wants to do. But this was so dumb, standing up at the podium after a win and saying the training staff mishandled Odell Beckham's injury, and then like going onto Twitter and being like, oh, When I was throwing the training staff under the bus, I wasn't throwing the training staff under the bus. Like, well, yeah, you were. That's exactly what you did.
Yeah, it was. It should have required a little bit more forethought, right? He knew he was going to be asked about that. And listen, you could see where a quarterback wants to stand up for his receiver. He wants to continue to build that relationship, which hasn't quite been what either of them expected. And he also wants an explanation for why the offense hasn't performed like they expected. Odell Beckham fighting through an injury gives some context for both Baker's play and Odell's play this season. But I agree with you. Yeah. It's, you know, as a quarterback that your comments are going to be scrutinized and picked apart. And this just kind of adds another subplot. And as far as Odell goes, you know, those stories aren't getting out there without Odell knowing that they're getting out there. I mean, he trains with Jay Glazer. He has trained with Jay Glazer in the off season. And so it's not too hard to connect some of those dots. And so, you know, the Giants obviously have made a ton of bad decisions over the last few years, as evidenced by where they stand right now. But you mm-hmm. could understand the Odell trade, because it was despite this superhuman talent, the results never quite matched what they wanted on a consistent basis. And, you know, it's hard to know exactly how much the injury has affected Odell this season, but it has been a continuation of that narrative in Cleveland.
I just hope Baker has some like really nice Christmas time holiday tips for all of the training staff, some really expensive gifts to hand out after this one. But let's go to the lightning-ish round at this point. We got six games to go here in this week 14 slate, and then we got a little bit of Cowboys talk to wrap up the show. But let's start with the Packers in Lambeau, hold off Washington. 20-15 is the final. A fairly comfortable win. Washington did get a late touchdown to pull within five. But, you know, this was more Dwayne Haskins not really looking ready. But at the same time, you know, Packers offense still not world beaters. And Washington still, they still play on defense. And Adrian Peterson is still running hard here. All right, staying in the NFC North, Vikings 20, Lions 7. Pretty expected result in this one. You know, David Blau, if you liked him on Thanksgiving, they didn't quite have the same magic here in Minnesota.
Yeah. That's about all I have to say about that game, Gary. Wasn't a very exciting one, expected results, and yeah, it's really all my thoughts.
Let's go. Well, let's go to the saddest story of the day, which is the Colts. Who,
oh man,
we referenced it earlier in the show. I mean, this is a bummer of a second half of the season. And look, this is a game. They go down to Tampa. They end up losing this one, 38-35. This is a game they led in the second half. Part of that 35 points was a Darius Leonard pick six. So it wasn't all the offense, but the offense was getting some big plays here. They've been looking for solutions without T.Y. Hilton and without Eric Ebron, and Paris Campbell was back, but played sort of a limited role in this one. And it was the defense. That defense, all of a sudden, I mean, they kind of look like the Texans on the back end after just playing great for the past season and a half here under Matt Eberflus.
Yeah, and we were talking about this heading into the weekend, right? That you felt like eventually the Colts would have to get a win. And this seemed like a good spot to do it. But you're right. I mean, to let the Buccaneers, you know, be able to get back in the game. And there are a lot of questions on the defense. But then also, you know, they've lost players on offense. They haven't, you know, been able to make up for that. And there seemed to be a lot of chatter about Eric Ebron. Frank Reich seemed a little bit frustrated about the decision to have season-ending surgery, which is, it's hard to criticize anyone's decision to have season-ending surgery when they're fighting through an injury. But just kind of far from the feel-good story that they were to start the year, Gary.
Yeah. Yeah, it's too bad. Let's go Jets 22, Dolphins 21. And yes, a lot of people were not super excited about this game. It ends up being a close game, ends up being a back-and-forth fourth quarter. It ends with a Sam Ficken game-winning field goal, but kind of the story was, and if you've seen the clips, Brian Flores was furious over a reviewed, it was not pass interference on the field. It was reviewed, and there was a pass interference flag thrown on a 3rd and 17. It was an 8-yard penalty, but obviously it's an automatic first down, which is pass interference. It was, I mean, quite frankly, it might have been pass interference. That was not a play that would have ever been overturned in the first 12 weeks of the season. There's absolutely no way.
Yeah, I read the pool report after the game, and Al Riveron said outright that, oh, you know, we haven't changed our standards, but that is absolutely not true because you're right. It clearly early in the season, you couldn't get anything changed no matter how egregious. And that was a very borderline call that if you hadn't watched it in slow motion, mm-hmm. you probably wouldn't have noticed.
Yes.
That's how I felt. Like you could see why it was called, but it had to really be slowed down. And so for that call to be changed, considering the egregious calls that were not touched earlier in the year, I just thought that was a very tone deaf statement for Riveron to make, because anyone who's been watching this year can see that the standard is beginning to shift a little bit. And look, we've seen this a lot. I mean, there are often corrections as the year goes on. I mean, remember the Super Bowl and the Corey Clement catch, and it moved a little bit and they let it stand for the touchdown. That was the perfect example of how the standard changes through the season. And I think that this there needed to be a change from what it was early in the year, because you couldn't get anything changed early in the year. But to not acknowledge that you're maybe course correcting a little bit, and that's why Flores was so heated, because it's just the inconsistency that really pisses coaches off.
Yep, and you had a similar one in Bengals-Browns where again, if there's a flag thrown on the field and then you saw the slow motion instant replay, you'd say, okay, yeah, I see why they threw that flag. But you had to see the slow motion instant replay to see that it was probably, certainly not definitely, pass interference. And yeah, it is about, you know, body weight rule last year too, where they sort of backed off a little bit on that as the year went on with all the roughing the passer calls. But boy, this is gonna get I feel like it's gonna get worse before it gets better as far as these pass interference reviews, and we can all continue to be angry at Sean Payton for sort of bringing this thing
Sky Judge.
It's such an easy solution. It really is. It really is. Falcons get a win over the Perry Fuel Panthers, interim coach for Carolina. 40-20 Falcons. I don't really have a whole lot to say about this game. It was an organized football game, and Falcons scored 40 points. This is the kind of performance we thought they were going to have all season.
When I picked this game, it was not hard to pick the Falcons in this one, because when you fire a coach like Ron Rivera midweek, which you could understand that they wanted to get a jump on the head coaching search because other teams already are underway, mm-hmm. but you know, he was such a beloved figure and the players really related to him. You know, he was a player himself and he had built really strong relationships across the locker room. So I think in that case, when the coach is fired, it's not a spark. It's the opposite. It totally drains them. And so I just felt like there was no chance that they had going into this game to win this one. And that was the outcome.
I was going to say Dante Jackson, the second-year cornerback who's sort of been up and down all season. He was furious with a couple of the zero blitz calls that they had out there that ended up being big plays. So players are unhappy with a lot of things in Carolina right now. Last game, Chargers 45, Jaguars 10. Minshew Mildits was back. I don't know what the Jaguars are doing. I don't know why Doug Marrone is still there. I don't know what this quarterback situation is. This is a mess, and the Chargers took full advantage. Austin Eckler just did whatever he wanted on the
field. It's a total mess in Jacksonville, because you make the decision to not go back to Foles, who you're financially committed to next year, and to stick with Minshew, and the offense struggles again anyway. And, you know, they're the team that went into the game with the same record as the Chargers, but the Chargers had all of these heartbreaking close losses. And so to me, it was striking of two teams with the same record, how far apart they could be on the spectrum. And of course, okay, any day in the NFL, that's possible. But this one just felt like it was really representative of two teams that are, you know, very far apart, despite on paper looking like they might be at the same point.
Yes, I agree with that. And finally, before we go, we'll be talking about this plenty over the next couple of weeks. But Jason Garrett, plenty of reports. He will finish out the season, which I think we all expected, because it just doesn't make sense to fire a coach when you are still within not only within reach of the postseason, but potentially leading the division and basically able to win out and make the playoffs at this point. But Jason Garrett going to finish out the season, but without a deep playoff run. this might be it. I mean, this is Jerry Jones's guy. This is why I'll kind of believe it when I see it. I just think Jerry Jones, this is his dude. This is his backup quarterback turned coach. I think he is just fighting himself to find a way to hang on to Jason Garrett.
I feel about Jason Garrett's job status similarly to how I feel about the Patriots. Kind of what you said, like, okay, I'll believe it when I see it. However, this year feels like it might actually be the year. Like, we have we've got to the point where, like, the Patriots might not be able to fight their way out of this lull that they're in, and Garrett may not be able to hang on to his job status after this season. Similar, you know, I've similar. Yeah, so it might be the first time that you hear the Patriots and Jason Garrett lumped together in one analogy, Gary. So this is really a rare moment in time.
I feel like Jason Garrett would appreciate that. But all I'll say is, once he's gone, like, all you people on Twitter, who are you going to kick now? I'm sure you'll find someone.
There always is.
But if the clapper is gone, there will be an empty hole in your heart. All right, that's gonna be a wrap for week 14. We've got all of our regular shows throughout the week. Be sure to tune in. The MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast is Jenny Brentis and me, Gary Gramling. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Ben Eagle is director of editorial projects and product. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB. Andy Benoit is founder of the MMQB NFL Podcast. Keep up with our entire lineup of podcasts 5 days a week by subscribing to the MMQB NFL Podcast for free on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, please do us a favor and leave a rating and review. It really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.